Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast, where we chat about a wide range of relevant information from around the world with focus on all aspects of physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. There are people in all of our lives who are the instigators, the button pushers, and in this case, the tree shakers. Often unknowingly, they set the wheels of change in motion for us to keep evolving and reinventing how we do life. This is hardly ever a comfortable process, but it is absolutely necessary in order to grow and thrive. This week's guest is Dr. Christy Moreland-Hughes, one of the most dynamic, knowledgeable, and engaging teachers I have personally ever had the privilege of learning from, and I'm absolutely honored and thrilled that she's taking the time to chat with me on the Reinvent Health Podcast. We're going to be talking about what matters most in life and how finding your purpose and passion directly impacts your health.
Oh, thank you for having me. I think you and I, maybe when I think about it, go back maybe even 10 to 12 years, I think, since we first met each other. So I think it's exciting. We've sort of grown up together in this field of medicine, right, as it's been evolving. And I would say the current pandemic, at least here in the United States, it's severe. There's this mixed swing going on all around us where we have individuals who are in these apathetic states where they don't care, right? They're hovering on the side of personal rights and personal freedoms and just showing incredible lack of empathy and compassion. And then you've got others on the other extreme who are running around with conspiracy theories going on and spouting unscientific knowledge. And then you've got this group, I think in the middle that just cares deeply about people, the high risks that are present, that we just don't know enough information, that we're lacking knowledge, we're lacking experience. And it seems like at this point, one of the biggest challenges that we're dealing with here in the United States is the incredible divides that are falling all over. And, as a healthcare provider, it's hard enough to keep up with the stats and the data on, what is the pandemic looking like? What is the mechanism of action? What are the physiologic aspects of what do we need to know about, coronavirus's progression on into COVID-19? I mean, it goes on and on. The medical depths, that we need to understand that we don't have all the answers for. But I think one of the biggest stressors that I'm seeing in my patients is the ways in which society is falling into this lack of compassion or compassion, right? I think this is the moment in all of my 24 years of clinical practice to really say what matters most means something, right? What matters most to people? And people are really picking their battles, in a sense that go far beyond just the bug.
Yeah. I think as a world population, we've reached this tipping point where many people were doing life knowing it wasn't working for them, but going through the motions, destroying their health more and more. And this pandemic has become so galvanizing for so many people, where we've been forced into a situation we've only really ever pondered changing the way we do life. It's a quite incredible social experiment and very frightening.
I agree. I love your terminology. I think we have to continuously remind ourselves, not only is it this land of medical detectives trying to solve this great mystery, but you said it perfect. I mean, it is absolutely one of the greatest social experiments.
So it's going to change the way we look at patients. It's going to change the way that medicine happens or evolves from this point forward. That in itself is exciting, and we know how much controversy is going to come out of this. We're just waiting to see. What are your thoughts around that?
I love how you're framing that, because I think if we step back and put it into functional medicine context, right, we're always looking for what are called the antecedents or somebody's predisposing factors. What was the underlying trend? And I think in those of us who played in this field for years and decades, we always knew that body composition mattered. Movement mattered, sleep mattered, nutrition fundamentals were always key and critical. And, here we are seeing that it's not just an age group. It's not just these sliced demographics. It's really of any age, those who suffer from chronic diseases that link back to metabolic distress, chronic inflammatory disorders and metabolic obesity concerns. You know, here's this group, right, of hypertension patients and metabolic disasters, unfortunately, that are rising to the surface and becoming the number one candidates for mortality with COVID development, right? So I think what's quite fascinating to look at the whole system is here, we know the risk factors come back to chronic disease. And we know those chronic diseases can be mediated with healthy lifestyle, foundational movement, sleep, stress modification, and appropriate nutrients. And it's this great mystery, right? Either have, you know, it's all over the literature. We're seeing this powerful role that vitamin C and zinc play, for example. Yeah. And they're just two of the biggest players in the game right now. And we can look at how are those specific nutrients engaged at the level of the receptor sites and viral replication, and it's explainable. Right? It's explainable. We can understand how they lower somebody's viral penetration. We can understand why they build the host immune's response. We can understand why they're pulling people out of crisis and more severe states that are leading to mortality. And there's almost like a new great divide, like you said, starting in medicine, where we've got those conventionally saying, we don't have any solutions. We don't have any treatment. And then you also at the same time have many physicians, conventional doctors, and integrative practitioners and nutritionists saying, wait a minute, we know a lot about how to prevent and manage this condition. And these are pennies on the dollar kind of therapies.
Yes, they are. They're inexpensive. They are almost like no-brainers sometimes. Has anybody looked at methylation and the people who are experiencing this virus really severely yet?
You know, I just got some new data. I'm speaking with a genomic company the other day, just literally this last week. And there is just on the front end, I haven't read all the studies, but they are sitting in my email right now, actually. there is on the front end, yes, there are some conversations looking at the relationship that methylation defects may play at the level of the receptor sites and its engagement in potentially zinc's involvement, vitamin C's involvement, and then really looking at what's happening with that ACE2 receptor site in both the gut and the lungs to see is that setting us up for, I think, some susceptibility. What I'd say, there's a lot to talk about with genetics. And I don't know if methylation is the only piece of it or whether I don't think it's probably the fulcrum, but I absolutely know that last week I got my very first genomic panels in that are COVID risk panels, that are respiratory resilience panels. And that list is pretty remarkable of where the genetic susceptibilities do lie in what we know right now today.
Right. You know, I think it's you know, as in functional medicine, we've been saying, get your vitamin D sorted, get your methylation sorted, get your foundation in place. And there are certain people who listen to that, and there's other people who just disregard it. And now it is so much in the front line. It'll be so interesting to see how functional medicine is taught after we have unwrapped this situation and what we're going to learn from it. I think, you know, where you and I and so many other practitioners are sitting, it's almost with a morbid fascination of how the rest of everything's going to play out after this, not so much worrying about whether or not you're going to get ill.
I think you're so right. And I think with the Institute for Functional Medicine, as an example, which is really one of our spearheads for more than 30 years, they have made available at ifm.org a 6-week mini series that every Tuesday night here in the United States, and you can access this from all over the world, they are offering a free live webinar once a week that's covering hot topics. And they're only 2 weeks in. Tomorrow night is the third week. And I've been participating in them as well. And what is exciting is each week they're unpacking more of the story. And the first week they talked about nutrients, nutraceuticals, and botanicals all the way down to where are they substantiated in the literature. And they've got beautiful handouts for patients and for practitioners that you can draw from. So I've been looking at those just this last week. They focused on lifestyle, dietary impact. I'm looking at sleep and resilience. Yeah. That was also, again, really powerful. And as these next weeks go on, my understanding is they're going to come back around and talk about laboratory testing and research resources going forward. And I think the Institute for Functional Medicine is doing as always, their due diligence at the highest level, where if it doesn't make the scientific literature cut, it's not going to be in their materials. But yet at the same time, I think what we're seeing is it's not alternative medicine. It never has been, right? Yeah. Functional medicine is root cause medicine. And COVID and the whole syndrome of chronic disease is susceptible to the onset of this viral insult, you know, is really helping us understand what made somebody susceptible. And the whole functional medicine model is coming to light, in which we've always said there's the host and there's the bug, right? Yeah. And this is an absolute classic example of being able to focus on host immunity, building that host immunity, and looking to mitigate, you know, some of those downstream effects.
Absolutely. So we met, like you said, 10 years ago. I did the first line therapy training that you offered here in South Africa. And I mean, what I'm really here to talk about is you and your journey over the last 10 years. you know, there's going to be a lot of people listening to the show who have no idea who you are. So I'd love it if you could just tell me or tell us more about how you got into medicine and what drove you to dig deeper than conventional medicine.
Ah, okay. What a wonderful question. It's such a journey, isn't it? Healthcare providers, we all have such a journey. I would say, going back, I graduated from naturopathic medical school 24 years ago. I've been in private practice and in the role of either seeing patients and or teaching. And I've spent over 15 years in an international teaching role, where there's years where I've spent up to 40% of my time on a stage teaching somewhere, you know, around the United States. So I'd say my passion has always been root cause medicine. I went down the path of always wanting to know more and more about how to do preventive and really personalized work. And over the course of the last decade, we're finally starting to see that tools are arriving. These tools in our toolbox are starting to present, where in healthcare and in general wellness guidance, individuals are able to now start to get these blueprints to their diet, right? Their blueprints to their movement, blueprints to their physiology. And what I think is really exciting is empowering people. In all of my 24 years in clinical practice, I would say I am the happiest with my balance right now that I've ever been. And it was a bumpy road to get here, really bumpy road to get here and find sort of that sweet spot. But say on the personal level, this form of medicine has always resonated with me. I came from a family line where there were a few conventional physicians and psychiatrists who all discouraged me from going this route. And they actually discouraged me from going into medicine at all, because they were so disappointed and disgusted with what medicine had become. And, you know, from the very beginning, you know, high school years, I can just still remember this passion burning, thinking there has to be another way. Like, there has to be a way to help people. There has to be other ways and resources without all the politics of the red tape. And that part of the journey led me down the path of learning more about nutrition, finding the naturopathic medical school training opportunities, finding the Institute for Functional Medicine, and then really going on and getting the chance to work with international groups and really help train physicians, conventional physicians, as well as integrative physicians from all over the world. So I'd say my path personally within medicine, you know, was just all consuming. I loved the research. I loved the data. I love getting to the causes and the cause of the cause and helping people with behavior modifications. I took a really active role in the creation and the founding of the concepts that launched the Functional Medicine Coaching Academy. And so I still serve on the board for that organization 6 years later. And, you know, I love the option of getting to see, you know, really effective health coaches.
I'm a big fan of protein. I have been recommending whey protein for years. And I was looking today at the nutritional profile of the camel milk. And it's probably even better for you from an immune perspective and amino acid profile than whey. And to look at the last 24 years, absolutely groundbreaking, because whey in itself, a good quality whey protein, is kind of expensive. Where do you source your whey from? Is it within local?
And I had a little brother. Where do you find your whey?
So we've got two sources. I mean, you always try to hedge, you know, this kind of industry, because some guys have gotten, some guys haven't gotten. So we've got two sources. One is a German source, and the other is an
performance. He always struggled with learning challenges that were present,
watching how
different we were. You know, me,
I don't know if you know, there's a difference between normal whey protein and
communicating, networking, connecting, and then
normal whey is basically a byproduct of cheese.
Because the curd becomes the trees, with the rocks, with the water, with the lakes.
To feed the whey to pigs, and then there's what they call native whey protein, which is whey extracted purely for that purpose.
In personality.
So we used to bring out the native whey, but it was very, very expensive. So we've sort of gone back to whey, but almost exclusively with a form of whey called whey arsenate.
Following a TBI, he had a severe head injury, and sort of watching steps in hindsight of sort of these steps down, right?
People who are lactose intolerant,
happy and positive and
I wouldn't
smart
recommend that to whey isolate,
active,
but you would probably find less of a hassle.
Lived in nature and communed in nature. It just was this great contributor society. And really watching this autoimmune disease ravish him from the inside out. You know, watching him develop these ulcerations on his skin where he had been bit previous years by ticks. You know, watching this whole formation of ulcerative colitis take hold on him where he developed like this Lyme autoimmune intestinal challenges. And interestingly, my little brother committed suicide 4 years ago. And I can so easily see how he got to that point. He had doctors, he had supplements, he had labs, he had people who cared about him. And you could watch the demise, you know, of it basically stealing his life force. And, you know, I have said countless times that, you know, the night he took his life is like when he left, I got my life back. And something powerful happened within those moments of finding he was gone and realizing, you know, no matter how much we poured heart and soul into helping him feel better, feel loved, feel connected, know he's a part of a family, for him, he lost over time what mattered most to him. And he lost that connection to his purpose in life. And you know, it wasn't that he even was living in noticeable states of depression or despair. It's just the things he loved the most were no longer accessible, right? And I would say that day, from that day forward, it was a wake-up call to remind all of us, including me in healthcare, that, you know, every day could be our last, and are we making every day count? And, you know, his words were so profound to me. The last things he had said to me was, he said, "How long do you think you can keep doing all of this?" And I knew what he meant. You know, he said those words, and that was his last question to me. And I knew what he meant, right? Four kids, super busy. I was not in a happy relationship with my kid's dad. My marriage was really tough, and it was not emotionally complimentary for either of us. Just not, it was a wrong formula of people and personalities, and we've been trying at it for 12 years. And, you know, I kept staying for the wrong reasons. And throwing myself further and further and further into medicine and what I love because it was nourishing my soul, right? But not realizing how much it was exhausting me on my personal level. My professional soul was fed and thriving and, you know, as happy as could be, but I was living in sort of this avoidance, right? And those words, I just kept hearing his words over and over and over again. Like, how long can you keep doing this? How long do you think you can keep doing this? And what I realized at the core was he was saying, from your level of authenticity, which I've known you to live your whole life, you are not being congruent, right? You're settling, you're compromised, and you're not modeling what kind of a soul connection you need to for your kids so that you can live right with yourself. And it was just a wake-up call. And that was my game changer. That changed everything about the way I practice medicine, how I mothered, how I took charge of my life, the decisions I made. And I really meditatively spent a substantial amount of the year after his death in this meditation where I would sit in my forest, I would look out the window, and I would anchor myself with these deep roots going down into the soil. And I would envision myself getting as rooted and grounded as I could to just really throw my taproot down as far into the earth as I could envision and throw out my tributaries into my soil. And I would just really focus on what were my roots and what did I need to cultivate in my soil. And then as part of that meditation, I would shake and shake and shake that whole core of my tree. And I would envision and watch the dead leaves and the dead branches falling off every day, literally every day I was shaking my tree. And it was remarkable because without asking things to leave my life, I noticed over the next year that things just started to shift in such a powerful way. The things that no longer served me and that I was holding onto for all the wrong reasons, if I wasn't willing to step away from them and set boundaries, they were leaving me. And it was a really powerful integration that, you know, it's not like a midlife crisis. I feel like I prevented a midlife crisis. Yes. You know, I circumvented a midlife crisis having that opportunity truly to keep asking myself every day what matters most.
Yeah. And sometimes the gifts we are given are disguised as tragic. And I've never met a healer, a real healer, who hasn't gone through turmoil and had to learn almost through really hard, tough lessons in life, how to do things differently. And I love the analogy of shaking your tree. It is absolutely glorious.
Well, it is launched into an entire self-care program, and I've got a Facebook page that people follow, and we were doing retreats on site, but with all these adjustments happening right now with the pandemic, we're actually going to be transitioning those to online groups, which I think is going to be wonderful. And so you can find it at Dr. Christy Hughes, Shaking Your Tree, and mm-hmm. That's the place in my healthcare where I play with, I think, the most important aspects of living your most authentic self, right? Yes. And, you know, I've got my practice and I've got my Dr. Christy Hughes site where, you know, I do a lot of work around the science, but I feel like my Shaking Your Tree is where I get to play with the art of good medicine, right? Yeah. Between the science and the art.
Yeah. So if we go back a couple of years to when functional medicine first took root, that was very much connected to mind, the mind-body connection and how our thoughts create chemistry and what that does to the immune system. So it seems like you've evolved your practice beyond your own roots into something far more powerful. Has this changed your experience with your brother? Has this changed the way you treat patients and how you almost approach illness?
I would 100%. I think it's what happens when you walk the talk, right? Yeah. I think it's what happens when you move away from knowing what you should do or they should do into truly experientially being connected, you know? And in some ways, I honestly can equate it to the difference between when I have my doctor brain on with a patient and I'm in charge. I'm supposed to be responsible. I'm supposed to be guiding and advising, which is really different than when I get to wear my coach hat, my physician coach hat, where mm-hmm. it's partnership, right? It's engagement. It's leading people to cultivate their own ideas and create their own goals and not tell them what to do or should them, but instead allow for them to let this sort of natural emergence happen, you know? So I would say I practice what I preach more authentically, and I take more of a coaching approach and use more of a coach hat with my patients, which is even more about partnership, right? Mm-hmm. It's about cultivating mindfulness, using positive psychology where it's appropriate, really focusing on behavior change, but instead of advice giving and dictating and giving people lists to go work off of, it's really organically sitting with them and using sort of the art of conversation to really get to know them better and help them figure out how long are you going to be able to keep doing this, you know, and where are you willing to get started?
Yeah, that's such a pivotal question. How long are you going to keep doing this? And I think, or I believe, I know for myself that empathy and having been down a tough path does create a different kind of healing relationship with your patients. They, on an unconscious level, know that you get them. And rapport mm-hmm. is such a key ingredient to helping a person walk their path and heal, that I would say to anybody wanting to study medicine or nutrition or functional medicine is that it's going to challenge you on an emotional level that you never thought possible. Because if you're choosing that part of that pathway to help people heal, you've got to know what it feels like.
You got to do the work, right? You really have to cultivate your soil. You've got to turn it. You've got to nurture it. And, you know, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, in functional medicine, what we call the base of the functional medicine model are really the roots in the tree, right? It's our sleep. It's our movement. It's these incredibly important aspects of restoration and mindfulness. It's our relationships that are around us, our ability to transform stress. I mean, these are some of the important things that create our stability, right? That allow for our tree to stand in the windstorm or the hurricane as it's coming towards our shore. And then really looking at love and joy, intimacy, relationship, you know, what's right, you know, in our environment, you know, is so deeply connected to the quality of that soil that we choose to plant ourselves in, right? Mm. I was just a couple months ago, I was working with one of our local hypnotherapists who I just love getting to connect with her a few times a year. And in this vision work I've been doing around shaking your tree, I've also was going through, I absolutely met my dream partner. I got married this last year and very quickly kind of shifted some things around to engage in a whole different level of heartfelt partnership. And there was this big gap and struggle between where we lived. We're 2.5 hours apart. And do I keep my property? Does he keep his property? You know, there's a lot in making those really big life decisions, you know, especially when you have a private practice and 4 kids on board. And, you know, in doing that work, one of my visualization sessions with her is I kept feeling that it was right for me to move, to relocate, that I was kind of done and did the work, you know, over 20 years in this area, and it was okay for me to make that leap. And we were in this deep hypnotic meditative sense. And my roots, I could actually feel the roots down in my tree. And all of a sudden, I realized that I wasn't spread out, that I literally felt like I had root ball. Like I was this like little ball of roots. And then as I was feeling my way through this, it was incredible because I could actually feel that I was in a pot. And then I realized energetically, like I remember the moment when I knew that I needed to pull of the soil I had. And I needed to be planted in, I needed fresh soil, right? I needed something that had been turned and nourished. And it's like, I literally felt like I got plucked up out of my old life, shaken off, thrown in a little pot for a while, sitting in this like little nourishment of fertilized, fantastic soil. And all of a sudden my root ball got big and tight and realized I got to spread out again. And I came out of that meditation hypnosis session with her and I said, I have got to get my root ball in some dirt and really fast. And it was just so obvious to me that, you know, it was this transition and I was ready to be dropped into that next bigger garden and allow for myself to really spread out and anchor. And, you know, it's such a silly little analogy, but it has like walked me through these years since I lost my brother in a way that it accurately represents the process I've experienced.
You know, I don't think there's anything silly about these analogies. This is such innate wisdom. And so many of us don't even know how to tap into that innate wisdom. How do you teach people to find their truth, their, you know, what their heart is trying to tell them and overcome the fear of change?
Oh gosh, it's like a $1 million question, right? That is the question, right? Mm-hmm. I think the first step is being willing to drop your guard and really look at yourself, right? And find sort of that truth in yourself. And I think depending on patients, personalities, or the people that sit in circle time with me and shaking your tree, I think the places I like to see people begin is right where they're at. Where are their strengths? What are their character strengths? I'm a really big fan of people using the VIA survey online because it's free and there's 24 known character strengths. And what is important to you will come out in taking that free online quiz. And you get this beautiful sheet that lists 1 through 24 of what's important to you, right? And I love to have people bring that simple tool to a workshop, bring it to a circle, bring it to their visits with me. And I like to have them just open up and start talking about what matters most to them. Because in figuring those pieces out that exemplify their character strengths and what they're really great at, is we can start with what matters and what they're good at and build from there. We can strengthen those attributes and see where they are in their lives and then say, okay, with the future and the goals you're setting for yourself, are they congruent with what matters most? Right. And there's this interface that can happen as people get real with where are they and where do they want to go? And then I think there is a valuable role in looking backwards for the purpose of saying, what were those critical pieces on my timeline that mattered? What do I want to retain? And what am I consciously willing to let go of? And there's somewhere between that historical timeline and that upcoming trajectory of where I want to go. And right in the middle is being present and attuned with yourself.
So I have to confess that on Facebook, when you posted a couple of years ago, the last words your brother said to you, it really resonated with me and it made me question how long I'm going to put up with what I'm dealing with in life. And that for me also got the ball rolling in wild directions. And ever since then, my entire life has changed as well. For the good in the long term, but at the time it is really, really shaking a tree, you know.
It's messy. It's messy work. It hurts, doesn't it?
But it does enable you to be better at what you do. And you know, you've really got to look at yourself and question why you do what you do. Are you staying in a situation because you are there to keep other people happy, but what is it doing to your health? And when I saw that question, what you'd posted, and I started questioning myself, I dropped so much mental, emotional, and physical baggage. But it was like breaking a limb for sure. But I wouldn't change it for the world because it was very powerful. So I have to thank you for sharing that.
You just gave me goosebumps, just chills, literally all over. And you know what I find interesting that you just said, which modeled my own experience going through that, is I know what to eat. I know how to move. You know, I was a fitness trainer and did aerobics when I was a kiddo, teaching and working at health clubs. Like I know all that, right? And what was so interesting to me is when I went through that same deep dive of asking those hard questions and being willing to hear the answers, you know, and try to find the truth in them, and then the bravery to do something with that knowledge. What was fascinating to me is my body also started to remodel. And I went on, I lost 30 pounds and I didn't do anything different. Yes. All I did is change the fact that I reconnected with my authentic self, right? And I just said, no matter how hard this may feel, I am just going to every day live as though this is my very last day. And did I do what my most authentic self would need to express myself today? And amazingly, that changed my physiology. In ways like I'd never anticipated. And I lost 30 pounds and it stayed off for 4 years. And I haven't done a thing other than get real with myself. And it helped me see that my weight for me, no matter what, it comes on when I don't feel safe. And it comes on as an alarm system for me. And it's always an indicator that I'm not sleeping enough and I'm not restoring enough.
I can completely relate.
It was a powerful message, and I can see those little mini waves. You know, if I feel like, oh my goodness, I can just tell I put on a few more pounds, I just have to stop and check in with myself. Yep, I need to sleep more. Yep, I need to take care of myself more. It's now become my little alarm system of self-care and authenticity. And, you know, and I continue to eat the same way.
You know, and you know what to do. You know how to eat. You understand inflammation. I mean, nobody is better equipped to eat well and do what it takes. But I can completely relate to that because it was shortly after you put the message out there. I had an experience that, well, as I mentioned earlier, but it prompted me to think about what happiness and authenticity has to do with our immune systems and what comes first, health or happiness. And I knew the answer, but now it's a case of investigating the causal factors. I see so many patients who I know are compliant. I know they eat well. They are absolutely on board, but they're not shifting. And until they get that aha moment, the hard aha moment where life is going to crack under your feet, the weight's not going to shift. And it's really difficult because you can't push a button for them. They've got to reach that point. And it's very tough watching people go through that when you know that's what it's going to take.
It's so true. And one of the pieces of shaking your tree that really emerged as one of the core tools that I use with people over weeks or the weekend when we work together, it came out of this work around life design that came out of the Stanford lab in design work. And they were helping people who are launching in their career or going back and reinventing themselves. They were looking at what are the core things to create true life balance, right? Because a lot of my passions are on physician self-care, practitioner self-care, and patient self-care. Yeah. And one model that they taught that really stuck and I integrated with functional medicine. So it is the core teaching tool in shaking your tree is we actually look at the tree rings of our lives and we look at the four quadrants that they teach. And I love that you're pointing out and from my own experience, what we really saw was health as one quadrant that we focus mostly on, right? When we're in healthcare, but the other quadrants to round that out was health and then work and then love, and then separately an entire dedicated section to joy. Yeah. And what I came to deeply realize was like I was living a joy deficiency. Like I was really good at work and I knew how to take care of my health. I could clearly see when I mapped out my timeline in the Shaking Your Tree format instead, I could see where my broken hearts, where my challenges in my relationships contributed to and caused the problems I was dealing with in my healthcare. And and those phases where then my default was to go deeper and deeper and deeper into medicine because I love it. And then it was a different kind of joy. You know, interestingly, I think partly what saved my soul was when I started snowboarding and skateboarding again 4 years ago. And I got back on my board, which was like always my anchor for years of my life. And I hadn't touched it in 12 years, which was like crazy to say. And I started boarding again. And I started riding with my kids. And I started longboarding. And I got a one-wheeler. And like I got back on a board and I forgot how much joy and centering and grounding that exercise is for me. And I worked on my joy deficiency and it was so noticeable what shifted in and all around me when I prioritized and gave myself permission to have and cultivate joy.
Yeah, I think part of the reason why children are so resilient and immune in many cases is because they have the sense of unadulterated joy and fun. And where in life do we lose that? Do we suddenly become boring, responsible adults who forget how to have fun? I think that's the start of aging. It's horrific.
It is. It is. And I think you can see it at every stage of life, people doing it right and people who are leading to their early advanced demise in a sense.
Yeah, I think in time we will start seeing correlations between dementia and loss of joy and dementia and Alzheimer's and loss of zest for life and doing things that bring you fun and joy and happiness. That's, I think, is the new horizon is start to build those the chemicals in the brain that tell you that you are still a kid, life is still worth living. So best the immune system, get on board and do what it has to do to keep you going because life's too short.
I love that you're saying that. I think it's the perfect summary. And I think somehow as we age, we influences, like there's almost this part of guilt, right? That comes along with, I shouldn't take time for myself or I shouldn't be feeling joy or there's so much suffering in the world. Who am I to deserve feeling that sense of joy, happiness, or pleasure? And I think there's a lot in involved in that deserving to feel the lightness and the love that can be out there. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of interesting hurdles that many of us have to go through to accept that and accept that in ourselves.
Yeah. Tell me more about the practitioner care. This has been a passion of mine for years because, you know, you go into any major hospital and you expect to be taken care of by nursing staff and doctors who are completely not taking care of themselves. And that to me is such a contradiction in terms. Where did your passion for practitioner care start?
I think huge. I mean, I think that was probably one of the biggest things that sprouted for me after losing my brother, which was, you know, when you're that close to somebody who has all these elements of love and joy in their life, but yet they still opt out, right? I think what triggered me is my awareness and realization of what physician suicide numbers really were.
Yes.
You know, and in digging deeper, you know, uncovering different patterns of addiction tendencies and looking at the power of isolation, right? And the negative complications that isolation brings. And for how many of our healthcare providers, they may be surrounded by people, but yet they energetically and emotionally still feel isolated. right? They're around bodies, but they're not really connected to people, you know? And so, you know, it was, again, like a huge eye opening. And at that time, I was in a full-time position with the Institute for Functional Medicine. And I was seeing patients on the side. I had a small private practice, and I was working full-time in a medical education role. And one of the assignments that I had, actually the last assignment before I transitioned out of that position and onto just a faculty position with IFM, it was interesting because I was hired to run a practice implementation project in which we brought in successful physicians and we focused on practitioner care. We focused on what is your practice, how do you practice, strategies for business and finance, different types of modalities and ways that you could practice. And in working with our lead consultant, I came to realize after being in the role of driving that project for 2 years and building physician resources that I too was at sort of that practice midlife crisis moment in my business saying, okay, yeah, do I want to try to keep the door open and just see patients 10% of the time, you know, because I'm not in here enough to be able to turn the books in a way that's financially working. You know, I basically was using other jobs to keep the practice afloat and balance the checkbook. Is that really what I want to do? And if I do, you know, accept that and say yes and subsidize the practice. Or, you know, I was really starting to realize how much I missed patient care, you know, just missed that one-on-one engagement. And it was literally in sitting with my practice consultant at that point driving this project and him saying, well, you kind of have two choices. You know, you could stay in practice and you could maybe bankrupt the company and just go get a job for somebody else. Or maybe you leave your full-time, you know, director role and you go back into private practice and you throw yourself back in and you grow your own thing. And it was such an eye-opening experience to be in the role of running the practice management team and realize, oh my gosh, I need to run my practice. I need to make a decision, right? Because it wasn't working in the balance that I had. And I didn't have enough time for my kids and I didn't have enough time for myself. And, you know, beautifully that was syncing up with my shaking your tree phase, right? And I came to realize, you know, I've done my work here. I spent 10 years in this position. I have loved it. And when I was working on shaking your tree, I focused a lot on practitioner self-care and I started with myself and realized in that exercise phase, what mattered most to me was my kids and getting to be present for my kids and traveling less and being home more. And yeah. So I made a lot of decisions. I started homeschooling my two boys that are 11 and 13, completely restructured my schedule with when I see patients and my kids' schedule with their dad transformed. And, you know, it honestly set me up beautifully to be able to go through this pandemic window because I created flexibility. I flipped most of my practice to telemed so that I could look at the options of moving and relocating to live with my husband and move my kids to a different area. And so, you know, it was still, it's going back to doing your own work, right? And going back to really asking yourself the hard questions. And so I'd say my interest in other physician self-care helped me identify and recognize my own incongruencies in my own sense of my personal self-care. And then after sort of cleaning up my life on a mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual level, then I next went in and did the same house cleaning on my practice. Yes. And now I love the balance that I sit in.
Yes. You know, just like nutrition isn't taught in medical school, self-care and how to see the human. And I can understand why doctors are taught, especially in fields like oncology, not to get emotionally involved because, yeah, it's horrendous. But on the other hand, the humanity is not there. And you're not going to survive long as a physician or even a nurse if you don't bring the humanity back. Even if you're doing it for apparently the right reasons, there should be tools that enable us to be human and help a person on a different spiritual, emotional level, but still do the work that needs to be done. And that takes a different level of committing to medicine, I think, than what a lot of people get into it for.
I would agree. And I think it is committing to yourself, connecting to yourself, right? And helping lead the way and teach others how to connect to themselves, to really hear that inner voice, that inner message. You know, and a term I know you've seen me use over the last few years is ikigai. And it's a Japanese term, right? Which means that which drives you out of bed in the morning and that which fuels your soul, your deepest passion, like what drives you to get up and have a desire to stay alive and stay in your body today. Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like that is one of those important pieces I like to bring into both patient care and physician self-care, is knowing that ikigai can change, the reasons why, you know, can change. What wakes you and drives you and allows for you to thrive can also change and grow as you do, and to keep coming back, and you have to check in and stay connected yourself to know what that is.
Mm. I have a lot of patients myself in my nutrition patients who are doctors themselves, a number of anesthetists, most stressed people I've ever met, a couple of rheumatologists, and a lot of psychiatrists. And it took me a long time to relax and see them as human and not as physicians, because that was my frame in relating to doctors for a long time. And I've yet to meet one physician who hasn't questioned whether or not they're in the right field and has had to go through quite a resurgence of questioning why they do this. What is getting them out of bed in the morning? And it's absolutely, and myself included, I went through a phase of wondering what on earth I was doing. Yeah. So, if that is your passion and your calling, you'll always be doing the right thing.
And just don't be afraid to keep shaking your tree, right? It's seasonal, right? Yeah. You shake and shake and shake and let that level go, germinate for a while, right? I mean, we all go dormant. You know, I think here in Minnesota, it's visually easy to work with because all of the energy and the sap is down in the roots, right? And the winter comes. And I just think energetically and soulfully, if we allow ourselves to really season and go through seasons and allow ourselves to release and move into dormancy and go work on ourselves for a while, and then be ready to come out with those buds of spring and be ready to come back out again and try again, you know, take another run at it. I think allowing ourselves those little tiny mini life and death cycles, it's so amazingly cleansing and enlightening for the soul.
Yeah, that just nails it. That exactly explains the whole thing, because most of us in this day and age think we have to be running at 100% all the time, and there's no time for downtime. And that is crazy. That is the underlying cause of most autoimmune issues, is when your body is just saying, a downtime. I've been through autoimmune myself, and it was simply not being in touch with that seasonal movement of there's a time to turn off and there's a time to turn on, and you can't have one without the other.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I think for me, I've always been such a goer and a doer that the more I came to recognize and realize that the state of dormancy is as equally active and involved as the state of expressing, right, flowers and budding, there's so much work that's going on inside of that tree to maintain life and vitality while it's dormant.
Yes.
Right, where you're throwing all your energy back down into your roots. And it's just that the people around you can't quite see it, right? But the work is still happening, and a lot of the really deep work and the going deeper into the groundwork and anchoring yourself and stabilizing yourself. Yeah. So that when you're ready to come out and show off that next round of, okay, here's what I think, or here's who I have evolved to be now, then the outside world gets to see that expression as we come back out. And so I too reframed for myself, it's an infinity, right? And outward, then inward. And it used to mean to me downtime or slowing down. And I had a hard time giving myself permission to make that okay. And the more I fell in love with the hard work that dormancy is, I made it instead, I reframed it as a part of it's remodeling. You're remodeling, you're regrouping, you're recasting, and you're basically getting ready for your now next outward season, right? And instead of thinking you're going to bloom and flower and flower and flower and flower, we're not. right? There's no living entity around us that does that. It goes through that cyclical wave. And so now I give myself permission to say, okay, I'm going to have a coming out bloom around this. I'm going to go work on that for a while. Then I'm going to pull back and come back and say, okay, what worked? And how am I going to do it on my next season?
Yeah, this makes me think of circadian rhythms as well, and how many people don't sleep well. They don't go into deep sleep. They are so centered on staying present and, you know, fully aware and fully giving that they don't even get enough rest when at nighttime when the brain needs to switch off.
Yes, 100%. I love it. They're like little mini seasons, right? Every day we have a season.
Yeah,
it's so true. It's so true.
And not sleeping is probably, in my opinion, I'm sure you share this as well, is underlies almost all disease, and you can't get anything right if you're not sleeping.
I think it's probably one of the most critical. I think food and nutrition and restoration, right? The nighttime sleep and the ability to take those daytime moments of mindfulness, those mini naps or those mini meditative moments, right? So daytime restoration and nighttime sleep, you know, and what we nourish ourselves with, you know, those seem to be the deal breakers, right? In cultivating health and wellness or setting us up for a trajectory of dysfunction.
Sure. So Christy, this has been, I don't know where the time's gone, but this has been possibly one of the most interesting podcasts I've recorded to date. And I'd love to talk with you more, and we could go on for hours. How you mentioned earlier on that the Shaking Your Tree is going to be available online. If you could just let me know how I can connect people to you after the show, and I will make sure this gets out there, because I'm going to sign up for sure. We all need to shake our tree, and the time, if ever there was a good time, it's now.
Oh, well, follow me on Facebook. I think that's one of my most active places, so that I can share things that come up on my physician site. So Dr. Christy Hughes, you can certainly find me there. And then I've got a couple other sub brands you can't miss. There's Dr. Christy Hughes Shaking Your Tree. And then there's also Dr. Christy Hughes Shed, where I focus more on detox, environmental factors, and how to shed that dead weight. So those are some of my favorite places to play in social media. So easiest way to find us and see what kind of programs we have going on.
And once again, thank you so much. In fact, when I started this podcast, you were the first on the list, and I thought, if I can interview Christy, that's it. I'm satisfied.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I have loved it, and it's beautiful watching your evolution and getting to know you for so long and see all the amazing changes you've made in South Africa. You know how much South Africa has a big place in my heart and soul. Yes. And so I appreciate getting to talk to you too.
This episode has yet again been sponsored by Jackson's Real Food Market. If you are looking for a way to get involved with helping those less fortunate, Jackson's Community Support Program, A Little Relief, is a great way to help provide poorer communities with real, nutritious foods. They have made it possible to help in so many ways. Please visit their Facebook page, Jackson's Real Food Market and Eatery, to find out how we can all help each other through the COVID crisis.